Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Friday, October 18th, 2019, Alaska Day. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. Tuesday, Alaska's Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer certified a ballot measure that would increase the state's oil taxes if voters approve it. Now, backers of the Fair Share Act have to gather more than 28,000 signatures to get that issue in front of voters. Legally, they have a year to get enough signatures, but to get it in front of voters next year, they need to gather all those signatures over the next 3 months. If they miss that deadline, it won't be on the ballot until 2022. The Fair Share Act would raise the minimum tax and eliminate oil tax credits for the state's largest legacy fields. That's Prudhoe Bay, Kuparuk, and Alpine. It would also require all of the state's major oil producers to publicly report how much money that they spend and make in the state. One passenger has died after suffering traumatic injuries in last night's plane crash at the airport in Unalaska. Another has been medevaced to Anchorage for treatment, while others receive care on that island. Laura Craigle has more on that accident from Unalaska.
The National Transportation Safety Board is investigating why Pan Air's Thursday evening flight from Anchorage to Unalaska went off the runway while landing in the Aleutian Island community around 5:40 p.m. City Manager Aaron Reinders was at the airport when the Saab 2000 arrived, carrying 39 passengers and three crew members. She says coming from the west side of Ballyhoo Mountain, which stands above the runway with water on either side, the plane made one attempt to land before ascending to try again.
And a second attempt, it went with the wind again. It did land, so all the wheels were on the ground, and then it wasn't stopping.
Reinders says the plane appeared to slow down some as it traveled the length of the runway, but it didn't come to a stop until its nose tipped over the edge of a rocky embankment just above the waters of Illooluk Bay.
Well, I don't know if it was coming fast or if it wasn't able to brake or if there was a gust or it wasn't readily apparent.
Pan Air officials say the airline, which is owned by Raven Air Group, is in close contact and fully cooperating with NTSB investigators and will share updates as more information becomes available. One group of passengers already determined to be safe is the Cordova school swim team, which has flown in for a meet. Officials say they've confirmed that all visiting students and chaperones are okay, though shaken up. In Unalaska, I'm Laura Craigle.
One commercial dive fishery here in southeast Alaska is off to a strong start this fall, while another struggles with heightened challenges from ocean conditions and its main market. The seasons for sea cucumbers and geoduck clams opened in early October. Both are prized seafood delicacies harvested by divers from the ocean floor. Cucumbers are bottom-dwelling creatures that resemble their vegetable namesake and are sold on a mix of Asian and domestic markets. Guideline harvest level for cukes this year is 1.9 million pounds in the region, up from last year and the second highest in the past three decades of the fishery. Phil Doherty is co-executive director of the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association, an industry group based in Ketchikan. He says sea star wasting disease has impacted a key predator of sea cucumbers.
And that has allowed the things that they eat, like sea cucumbers, to have kind of a resurgence in population. So that's why we're seeing large numbers of sea cucumbers around, because we've lost a major predator of them. On the downside of that a little bit is that the sea cucumbers are a little bit on the small side, and we're dealing with a immature population that started to blossom here about 3-4 years ago. So the cukes are a little bit smaller than what the market would like, but there's a lot of them.
With more cucumbers, industry interest has also increased. There are around 200 divers fishing this year, up from a typical 170. Doherty says that fishery was worth around $11 or $12 million last year. Diving for cukes can be finished by late November or early December. By the third week of this month, the catch total had already topped 500,000 pounds. Meanwhile, the dive fishery for geoduck clams has a lower guideline harvest level this year. The large clams are plucked from the ocean floor and shipped whole and live to overseas markets. If the clams don't test too high for paralytic shellfish poison or inorganic arsenic, There was some diving in early October, but PSP levels tested too high and the fishery stayed closed in the middle part of this month. Doherty says in the past, 75% of areas would pass that PSP sampling. He says lately it's more like 25% of areas that pass, and some don't open all season.
There are some areas, as I said, over the past 2 or 3 years, that we've harvested all through the wintertime and into late spring, and we cannot get them to pass PSP testing. So there's something happening here over the past 4 years, 5 years, but really 4 years, that has really affected our PSP levels in Southeast Alaska. And I don't want to hazard a guess on that, but it's pretty obvious.
Besides ocean conditions, market conditions may also be driving down the price for clams. Doherty says clams from Alaska and other parts of the Pacific coast are flown live to Hong Kong for distribution to mainland China.
Of course, there's been some a lot of political activity over there, and the airport's been closed down every once in a while. And so the political upheaval in Hong Kong and the tariffs imposed by the United States on China goods, and the tariff imposed by China on U.S. goods has definitely dropped the price down, especially for geoducks.
The geoduck price last year averaged around $5 a pound, but Doherty expects it could be lower this year. That fishery can run through the winter and into the spring, depending on ocean conditions and fishing time. As many people in Sitka celebrate the 152nd anniversary of the transfer of Alaska from Russia to the United States today, others are working on reframing the holiday to include the idea of decolonization. Recent events at the Sitka campus of the University of Alaska on Indigenous Peoples Day were intended to move the conversation forward. Robert Woolsey has more on that story from Sitka.
This was the scene 2 years ago on the 150th anniversary of the Alaska transfer. A large group of Sitka residents gathered at the base of Castle Hill to sing the Eagle Sorrowing Song, while on top of the hill, another group of Sitkans dressed in 19th century period costume fire salutes while the flag of Tsarist Russia is lowered and the U.S. flag is raised.
The thing is in our town here, there's a long history. This land was never unceded or surrendered.
Lakota Hardin works in health promotions for the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium.
And the history, you know, of Alaska Day coming up, that there's this sale. Well, it's an illegal sale. You can't sell something that isn't really yours. So people, there's controversy around that, but that is the history.
SEARCH is one of a large group of partners, including Sitkins Against Family Violence, Sitka Counseling, the Sitka Health Summit, and the University of Alaska, who are trying to engage and work around decolonization and more fully recognize that Alaska's history, while worth celebrating, is more complicated than it's traditionally rendered, especially during the Alaska Day Festival. This effort is not unique to Sitka. Indigenous Peoples Day has replaced Columbus Day in many jurisdictions. Hardin was there at the beginning.
I was living in Berkeley, living in the Bay Area, when the very first Indigenous Peoples Day was proclaimed by the city of Berkeley back in 1992. And it was because of the reenactments of the Columbus and his ships, and the big Italian population there in the city would have these big parades, and they were planning to reenact and replicate the three ships. And, of course, we weren't having it, and that was kind of how it began.
Taking a cue from Indigenous Peoples Day, there are many who are beginning to describe Alaska Day as Reconciliation Day. But Michael Mosbach with the University of Alaska says there's much more to this partnership than a single day in October.
The lens that we're trying to view this through is this idea of the past being something that is not necessarily your fault if you are a part of the settler colonial culture, but it is something you're responsible for. And so in moving forward with this work, we hope to unpack what it means to engage in decolonial work and make sure that that's something we carry forward with us into every day.
Indigenous Peoples Day was honored in Sitka on October 14th with a series of discussions, dances, meals, and free admission to the Sheldon Jackson Museum, with the objective of moving toward a deeper understanding of what's truly worth celebrating.
And so one of the goals is to come together as a community and understand some of the language around these issues, understand mm-hmm. what it means to engage in decolonial work, understand issues like historical trauma, and kind of unpack some of these relationships, and then use that knowledge to, as a community, come together and move forward into more consistent programming around these topics.
Mosbach says there are plans to create a decolonial task force so Sitkins can continue to discuss these issues long after the Russian flag has come down over Castle Hill on October 18th. Reporting in Sitka with help from Aaron Fulton, I'm Robert Woolsey.
In other news, 30 years after the Exxon Valdez oil spill, the state of Alaska is looking at whether to change its requirements for oil spill prevention and response plans. One conservationist worries the move could lead to a watering down of environmental regulations. State Environmental Conservation Commissioner Jason Bruni says there's no intent to do away with the plans. In a release, he said he's heard from Alaskans that contingency plans, quote, are unnecessarily burdensome while lacking corresponding environmental benefits, unquote. But in an interview, he said he also has heard from those who think the rules don't go far enough. The department is taking public comment as it considers whether to propose changes. Poker players gather Sunday at the Tides Inn here in Petersburg for Annabelle's annual poker tournament, now in its sixth year. The event honors avid poker player, artist, and longtime KFSK volunteer Annabelle Baker, who passed away in 2012. Proceeds go to Beat the Odds, which Baker helped start in the community to fund cancer treatment, support, and travel. And I spoke with organizer Jay Stanton Greger about this year's poker tournament.
This Sunday at the Tides Inn Conference Room, as per the usual, we kind of open the main doors in the conference room at 3. The people kind of get settled in, eat some snacks, and we start the game promptly at 4.
Okay. And let's see, same rules as has been in the last few years? Anything changed?
No, it's the same standard format. For those who have been curious about it or want to know more, it's a $125 buy-in, $100 of which goes to the players' pool and $25 goes to Beat the Odds. Any time during the first hour before the dinner break, if somebody is at or below their starting amount, they can rebuy in for the same denomination. And at the end of that first hour, anybody, regardless of chip count, can, for $125, add on a whole pile more of chips to really get the game going.
Okay. And, of course, this tournament honors Annabelle Baker, who was a real gambler herself.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Joe, because as many people knew Annabelle for so many different of her things she did for the community and for her recreational time, like, she loved playing competitive poker and she was really good at it. I know her husband Patrick had always talked about Annabelle wanting to be remembered in town, and she is for a lot of things. She's alive with all of us in a lot of ways, but the poker edition felt really good to bring that up, and we asked Patrick 6 years ago if we could do that. He was ecstatic that we would host that tournament, and I'm glad to do it every year. It's so much fun.
It's going strong. It raises a couple $1,000 every year, it seems like. And do you have a goal this year of what you're hoping to raise for Beat the Odds?
Well, of course, man. My goal is always more than last year. But generally speaking, we bring in between, I think our low once was $1,200 for Beat the Odds, and I think our high was about $1,750. So I guess I've got a goal. Let's go $2,000. That'd be a great goal for Beat the Odds this year.
Okay. And for other newbies, is there learning time on the front end this year?
Yeah, absolutely. If anybody is unsure about playing No Limit Texas Hold'em or our tournament structure or how things work, show up closer to 3 and one of us will sit down and do a tutorial, kind of a once-over, make sure you feel comfortable. And even though the game's competitive, even during the game, we all willing to help each other out if people have questions. Although we're competing highly, we also want to be friendly and have fun. That's the name of the game.
Is it pretty serious? Do people wear the hoods over their heads and the sunglasses and try to limit what their information they're giving other players?
Oh, I don't think it's World Series of Poker on ESPN style that way, but we usually get one or two sunglasses people just for comic relief, I think. No, people, we obviously play to win. There's a serious air to it, but it's also, we're all friends and neighbors here in town, so we like to have fun and laugh as well.
All right. Anything else about this year you want to get the word out about?
I think for me and for new people who didn't know Annabelle, it's a great opportunity to meet people who are really close with her and hear stories about her competitive nature. And really, we just really like getting together once a year to celebrate Annabelle. I mean, Pat's getting up there now, and as I joke with Patrick a lot, it's good seeing him really happy and looking young on this one day of the year. It's really fun.
And for people thinking about getting into the game who don't know it that well, it's a relatively simple game to learn, but a difficult one to master.
I think Yeah, poker in general is one of those tough games to master because it's, call it 85% skill, but there's still 15% luck. You can play perfectly and still lose sometimes. It's my 7-year-old and I joke around that it's not a fair game that way sometimes.
It's Jay Stanton Greger, one of the organizers and participants in Annabelle's annual poker tournament. Doors open at 3 o'clock on Sunday at the Tides Inn Conference Room. Poker starts at 4. And for more information, you can call Stanton Greger. His number, 406-202-0576. For KFSK News, I'm Joe Vicnicki. Coming up on KFSK, we have Fish Radio and the Alaska Fisheries Report, and that'll be followed by Street Beat Music with your host, Steve Berry, this afternoon. Later on today, After School Notes at 2:30, the Group of Advisory Teens, also known as GOAT. And at 4 o'clock, All Things Considered, local news and updated weather at 4:30. Alaska News Nightly is on at 6 o'clock tonight, followed at 6:30 by the Milk Crate Sessions, Pete Brantuis, your host. And at 9 o'clock, the Beale Street Caravan tonight featuring a performance with Todd Snyder in Memphis. And 10 o'clock, Radio Free Petersburg. Pat Murray hosts that show. Coming up next, weather and messages.
Support for KFSK comes from Valhalla View Grill, providing full-service dining to Elks Lodge and Emblem Club members and their guests each Thursday through Saturday in the Elks Dining Room, with weekly specials available on their Facebook page and reservations by calling 772-4601. That's Valhalla View Grill.
47 degrees outside the KFSK studios. The forecast for today is for numerous rain showers, highs in the mid-40s with light winds. And that's the forecast for the next few days. Numerous rain showers. Lows overnight dropping down to the mid-30s tonight. Light winds, and same thing into tomorrow. Then rain likely for Sunday right through Thursday next week. We'll see highs in the mid-40s, lows around 40. Marine forecast. A complex low-pressure pattern will persist over the Gulf through today and weaken through the day tomorrow. Another low will track east-northeast across the southern Gulf by tomorrow night. Inside waters for Stevens Passage today and tonight, southeast 15 knot winds and seas 3 feet. Tomorrow, south winds 10 knots and seas 2 feet or less. And tomorrow night, winds out of the northeast 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Southern Chatham Strait for today, southeast 10 knot winds, seas building to 3 feet this afternoon. Near ocean entrances, seas 11 feet. Tonight, southeast 15 knot winds, seas at 3 feet in the evening, then down to 2 feet or less, except near ocean entrances, seas 9 feet. By tomorrow, winds out of the south 10 knots, seas 2 feet or less, except 8 feet near ocean entrances. And tomorrow night, northeast 15 knot winds, seas 3 feet, except 8 feet near ocean entrances. Frederick Sound for today and tonight, southeast 15 knot winds, seas 3 feet, down to 2 feet or less by this evening. For tomorrow, winds out of the southwest 10 knots, becoming easterly in the afternoon, seas 2 feet or less. And tomorrow night, east winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Sumner Strait for today, east winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Near ocean entrances, seas at 5 feet. Tonight, east winds 10 knots and seas 2 feet or less. Same thing tomorrow. And tomorrow night, east winds 15 knots, seas at 3 feet. Clarence Strait for today, southeast 15 knot winds and 3-foot seas, except 7 feet near ocean entrances, a slight chance of thunderstorms. Tonight, southeast 15 knot winds with 3-foot seas down to 2 feet or less. Tomorrow, winds out of the southeast 10 knots, seas 2 feet or less. And by tomorrow night, winds out of the southeast 20 knots, seas at 5 feet. Quick look at the outside waters, the marine forecast for Cape Decision to Cape Edgecombe, small craft advisory through late tonight. Winds today out of the southwest 15 knots, 16 foot seas, and a slight chance of thunderstorms for the next few days. For tonight into tomorrow, south winds at 15 knots with seas 14 feet down to 13 feet by tomorrow. And tomorrow night, southeast 20 knot winds, seas at 11 feet.
Support for KFSK comes from Tamiko Inc., with services for commercial divers, including tank refills with dockside pickup and delivery and charge accounts available. That's Tamiko Inc., working in Southeast for over 40 years, located at 400 Mitkoff Highway, 907-772-4585.
Muskeg Message goes out to those currently serving their term of jury duty. Your services are not needed this month. Your next call-in is November 13th after 6 p.m. That's from Petersburg Trial Courts. Happy birthday today on the 18th of October. Adam Swanson, Rebel McGrath, Ariel Tucker, Casey Manish and John Wecon, and Cindy Moyer, happy birthday. Looking ahead to tomorrow, happy birthday on the 19th of October, Bennett McGrath, Tom Wood, Ellen Thompson, and Kingston Buckner. And on Sunday, October 20th, happy birthday to Roxy Lee, Naomi Weldy, Mike Nelson Jr., and Jesse Agner, also Jane Grantham, happy birthday. Reminder that a donation account has been set up at First Bank for the family of Doug Larson. Contributions can be dropped off at the bank or mailed to P.O. Box 1109 in Petersburg for a deposit to the Larson Family Fund. Parks and Rec Community Center is closed today for Alaska Day, and the pool area is closed tomorrow the 19th for a high school swim meet. That swim meet gets started this evening with competition at 6:15 tonight and noon tomorrow. And senior appreciation for the high school team is at 1 p.m. tomorrow. Teams from around Southeast competing. This is the one chance to see the swim team swim locally. A couple other community calendar items for today. The Clausen Memorial Museum invites the community to view letters from Frank Booth and William Paul and others involved in the struggle for civil rights in Alaska. And also tonight at the museum, there's an art show featuring Kelly Wood and Lisa Schrammick Adams from 5 to 7. That show is called From Air to Sea and Studies of Creatures and Landscapes. That's on display until October 28th. The museum's open 1 to 5 weekdays and noon to 5 on Saturdays. Firelight Gallery and Framing is hosting an artist show and reception for Al Laudert, the Shrimp Whisperer, and that's tonight from 5 to 7. Tonight also, Steak Night at the Moose Lodge, 6 to 8 p.m., open to members and their guests. Ragnarok Rollers will be serving. Communities welcome to play bingo each Friday upstairs at the Sons of Norway Hall. Bingo starts at 7 and doors open at 6. And the Mobility Assist Chair is also available to help you upstairs if necessary. You must be 19 years of age to play. Mitkoff Island Alcoholics Anonymous has a candlelight meeting tonight at 7 p.m. at the Episcopal Church. More information at 518-0061. So look at items through the weekend. There are exercise classes with Karen Malcolm in the Community Center Fitness Room tomorrow. Strength training from 6 to 7 a.m. For information, contact 518-0061. KFSK Pumpkin Patch is open Saturdays and Sundays throughout October at 8.9 mile of Mitkoff Highway, featuring pumpkins for sale, kids' games, the bounce house, and fun activities for the whole family. Proceeds support KFSK, and a thank you to Anchor Properties Trading Union and the Petersburg Volunteer Fire Department. There's a free soup and bread lunch available to all each Saturday from noon to 1 at the Catholic Church, located at the corner of 3rd and Dolphin Streets. Petersburg basketball teams are holding a barbecue chicken dinner tomorrow from 5 to 7 at the Moose Lodge downstairs. It's dine-in or take-out. Cost is $15, and it can be delivered for an extra $5. To find out more or to get tickets, contact Rick at 518-0185 or Dino at 518-0611. Also, basketball players have tickets as well. Sons of Norway is holding a pancake breakfast this Sunday from 10 to 1 at the Sons Hall. Cost is $10 for adults and $5 for kids 10 and under. Funds go to hall maintenance and upkeep. Devil's Thumb Shooters have weekly